This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for my weekly visit with John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, how are you?
I'm doing just great. A little hot today, a little frazzled from the delay in the start of the White House briefing, but glad to be here.
Well, John, let's start with the White House briefing, because it was a week ago at this time that you were there for the president's first press conference in almost a year. And even in the days following that up to the present, the narrative has been how the president's been handling this situation down in the Gulf. We've gotten a little bit of good news towards a possible capping of the oil leak, but we're still a long way away from actually hearing that word in its finality. What's your sense on how the White House has handled this and handled the criticism?
The White House is handling it in the sense that it seems to share blame at one point with British Petroleum, and on the other hand, give British Petroleum a sharp kick when that is needed. Certainly some of the comments about Tony Hayward's calls for getting his life back and the failure of BP to take action earlier and more successful are cases in point. And there is even talk of legal action from the administration against the petroleum colossus. Now, that said, the president is going down there tomorrow. He is going to meet with real people, as one of my colleagues at the White House put it. And there is a sign that things may be turning around. He's also been meeting with the parish presidents as well as Governor Jindal. And today, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs himself raised Governor Jindal's criticism of BP to all of us. That said, if this works out, the president will probably have avoided a long-term damage to him. It will not be Obama's Katrina, but it didn't help.
John, let's talk about another major issue that's on the president's plate, although he hasn't had a lot to say about it yet, and that's the latest flare-up in the Middle East. Israeli commandos raiding that ship of hostiles that was trying to get through on a humanitarian basis into Gaza. Nine of them ended up dead, hundreds of them taken prisoner and eventually deported back to wherever they came from. Turkey, of course, was the original point of embarkation for this boat. Now we've got more boats headed there. Well, how significant is this? How do you expect it to play out?
Well, it's very significant in the sense that Israel is becoming increasingly more marginalized in the world scene. I don't think there's any argument about that. And this blockade has worked so far, but there was always going to be a chance that the ships coming in would provoke the Israelis. And you know what happened in that. The bait was out there, and Israel fell for it. Now, Israel certainly would seem to be justified. According to a study prepared in Denmark, the International Humanitarian Relief Organization, the umbrella group that brings relief and supplies into Gaza, has a long history of supplying arms to Muslim terrorists from Chechnya to Bosnia-Herzegovina to, yes, Gaza. And Israeli intelligence has report on this as well. Certainly they lost on the public relations front, but Prime Minister Netanyahu talks about an offensive of hypocrisy from the rest of the world. In addition, Israel is having a problem with the Muslim country that's been its closest ally, Turkey. In the end, there may be no long-term damage between the United States and Israel, but it doesn't help Israel's cause at all.
John, let's move on to politics now. And just when the White House thought the Joe Sestak controversy was past it, there's another story of pretty much the same ilk coming out of Colorado, because the White House apparently wanted Senator Bennett to have a clear road to the Democratic nomination. Obviously, that's not the case. Now an offer of a paid job. Is there going to be more fire here, or is this just still a bit of smoke?
Well, this was raised no less than 10 times at the White House briefing. And in the Romanoff affair, the president's spokesman, Mr. Gibbs, argued that no law was broken because there was no quid pro quo. And it appears former House Speaker Andrew Romanoff applied for three administration positions related to the U.S. Agency for International Development. And this is before his Senate bid against Senator Bennett took place. Nonetheless, coupled with the Sestak affair, and the time it's taken to issue explanations, one gets the feeling that Barack Obama's promise of transparency and a new kind of leadership is a bit tarnished.
John, let's talk quickly about some of the primaries that happened this week before we get to the barrage of primaries we're looking at next week. First of all, two current members of the House will not be back. One of them we knew wasn't going to be back was Arthur Davis of Alabama. He was running for governor and surprisingly lost by more than 20 points. The other was Parker Griffith, the Democrat turned Republican, who was soundly defeated in the GOP primary in the 5th District in that state. Surprises either one?
Arthur Davis losing the Democratic primary for governor was no surprise. Although he's been compared to Barack Obama because he's an African-American, Congressman Davis ran as a conservative Democrat, proudly opposed the president on the health care bill, and lost to a liberal Democrat, State Agriculture Commissioner Ron Sparks, who has much closer ties to the Obama wing of the party. In the case of Parker Griffith, this is a case about welcoming converts to the church before it's certain that they've read their catechism and had their first communion. Parker Griffith had voted frequently with Nancy Pelosi, including opposing Republican alternatives to the stimulus package and the health care bill. He was a target for County Commissioner Mo Brooks, a strong conservative who decried socialism in Washington. In the end, Mr. Brooks won with more than half the vote against two opponents, one of them who was the convert to the Republican Party. A convert, I might add, who was a major contributor to Howard Dean for president in 2004.
John, let's go lickety-split here through some of these primary. Get to your predictions on what's going to happen on Tuesday. First of all, who will win in Nevada to take on Harry Reid, the GOP Senate primary?
I'm going to go out on a limb today and say it will be Sue Loudon, former Republican state chairman and former TV newscaster.
And let's move on to California. Barbara Boxer considered more vulnerable than in the past. Will it be Carly Fiorina, Tom Campbell, or Chuck DeVore?
My heart says Chuck DeVore. My head says it will be Carly Fiorina because a lot of the moderate to conservative and conservative element in California just do not want to see the liberal Mr. Campbell as their nominee.
In the governor's race in California, will it be Brown versus Whitman in the fall?
Brown versus Whitman again. Steve Poizner, state insurance commissioner, ran a good campaign, but he just drowned in Meg Whitman's cash.
John, we heard a little bit earlier from a different guest that the lone House member who could be in danger in his own primary on Tuesday could be Bob Inglis in South Carolina. Do you agree?
Certainly, and as a matter of fact, I know one of his primary opponents, Dr. Christina Jeffrey, one-time historian of the House. And my guess would be that Inglis can survive. But again, he voted for some of the spending measures in office, and while generally conservative, he is not all that solid. And increasingly, Republican voters, as we saw in Utah, as we saw in Alabama, want the real deal. I say he survives, but he's going to have a little sleepless evening.
Very quickly, John, a very crowded field to be the nominees to be the governor of South Carolina. Who emerges?
Henry McMaster, state attorney general. He may have to go through a runoff, but people like him because he sued the federal government over the health care bill, and 13 other attorneys general have joined him.
We'll see what happens on Tuesday. John, as always, thanks for your time.
Watching the primaries and knowing it's going to be a long night, June 8th. I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.